طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This is John Roberts. 4 years ago on This Week in Palestine, I interviewed an amazing Palestinian woman by the name of Kitam Edelbi. We first met Kitam in 2007 when she was a student at Lesley University, studying for her master's degree in expressive therapies. After receiving her degree, she returned to her native Palestine with a vision that she wanted to serve the children of Palestine suffering from the effects of living under Israeli military occupation. She wanted to maximize her reach as an expressive therapist. She wanted to reach as many children as possible, and she wanted to train as many teachers and parents as she could in the educational techniques of expressive therapy. Her vision to do this was to create a mobile classroom that could go into the refugee camps and villages of the West Bank, and hopefully one day Gaza, to not only involve children in doing expressive therapies through art, drama, the use of puppets, and creative play, but to train teachers and parents to carry on her work after she left. Her dream was to equip a bus as that mobile classroom, filled with the necessary creative responses, and drive that bus to the refugee camps and villages throughout the West Bank. Today we will update you on Kitam's dream, 4 years after she first shared her dream with us on this program. Kitam grew up in the Akka region of northern Israel. 20% of the Israeli population today is comprised of Palestinians, the descendants of those Palestinians who were not driven out of Israel during the ethnic cleansing in 1948. In this interview, I discuss with Kitam what it is like to live in Israel as a Palestinian. What her people face as Palestinian citizens of Israel. Here is my interview with Kitam Edelbi. This is John Roberts, and my guest this morning is Kitam Edelbi. Kitam is a Palestinian who is a citizen of Israel. Over 20% of the Israeli population, approximately 1.5 million people, are Palestinians. These are the Palestinians and their descendants who succeeded in not being driven out in 1948 when Israel ethnically cleansed a majority of the Arab population to create what is now the State of Israel. Some 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes into refugee camps in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Gaza, and the West Bank, and over 350 Arab villages were destroyed in 1948. Kitam grew up in Akka City, now within the State of Israel. She received her master's degree in expressive therapies from Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She is currently living and working in Jerusalem and has returned to Cambridge in pursuit of two of her dreams. One, to arrange to return to Lesley to study for her PhD, and two, to raise money for an educational project she hopes to establish in Palestine, which she will tell us about. But first, we want to talk to Kitam about growing up in Israel as a Palestinian. Kitam, Israel characterizes itself as the only democracy in the Middle East, which of course is false. Lebanon, for instance, is a democracy. And we often characterize Israel as an apartheid society because of the way Israel treats not only the Palestinians living under occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, but also the way it treats its Palestinian citizens who live in Israel.
and that is over 20% of its population. As one who grew up in Israel, paint us a portrait of what life is like for Palestinians living in Israel. How does Israel treat its Palestinian citizens?
Israel can consider itself as the only democracy in the country in the Middle East, but I don't think that this is the reality, and life there looks different from this world, or probably very far from this world. I grew up, I grew up in this beautiful old city, Akka city, which called also in English, Acre City. And the old city of Akka looks very, very different from the new city now, which is mixed. We do have approximately 8,000 Palestinians still live in Akka, in the old city. And the life there looks so much different from the life in the new city. Everything is different. And if we talk about schools, street, houses, all facilities are much poor and very less fancy and very less sophisticated from any other part of the new city. If I talk about little bit about the villages of Galilee, which very close to Akka, and which they locate in front of all the Israeli cities and settlements that surround them, you can see a huge difference from life within the Palestinian villages and life within these settlements or Israeli villages or cities. Very crowded, very very crowded population, very small streets, a very small number of schools, very small numbers of after school programs. So if this is democracy, yeah, they can name it democracy. I don't see it this way.
In Akka, is the city pretty much divided between where Palestinians live and where the Israelis live? Is it
the reason it's divided? Because before 48, Akka was only the old city.
Yeah.
This was the city.
That was it.
And just a few families here and there were out of the old city. And when I say the old city, which means that the whole city that's surrounded by the very, very old wall, which is very beautiful. And it's considered one of the oldest cities in Palestine, and still now one of them, like Jaffa City. But Jaffa City looks much different now because big Israeli population was settled in Jaffa City, and that's why the government, the Israeli government, invests so much in Jaffa City, in cleaning the city, making it more beautiful, wide streets, beautiful beaches, while in the old city, the 99% of the population are still Palestinians.
Yeah, I remember when we were in Lod, where the airport is. The Palestinians were driven into a ghetto. I mean, that's the only word for it. And even people that had lived in their houses, original houses, ancestral houses, many were driven out, driven into that section of Lod, and we're getting almost no municipal services whatsoever. There was garbage on the street, the water services, everything was just completely different, even though they pay equal taxes. Is there in Akka, is
more or less the same?
More or less the
you
same.
You don't see much garbage in the streets because they people, try also to be careful or to take care of it. And the municipality also cleans that part of garbage thing. But other facilities, we have none, nada, nothing. Mm. We do have some, we have one school and one after school program. That's all. It's all what we have in the old city for approximately 8,000 people who still live, still live within the old city.
So there are completely separate schools?
Yeah. Even in the new city, we do have Arab schools, but they are not mixed because Israeli students don't usually go to Arab schools. While, on the other hand, you can see some Arab students who do so well in their schools and want to get a better school, so they do go to Israeli schools. Because in general, most of the Israeli schools are way better from the Palestinian schools.
What about housing? Is that pretty much segregated? Are there apartment buildings where you might find... both.
You mean about the old city? In the old city?
Yeah.
You can't build one single room in the old city because the municipality has this law that whatever you do in your house, you do it within the house. They don't let you change or renovate anything.
I see. You can't add to it.
You can add to it because they don't want people to change the view of the old city. But on the other hand, these old houses, some of them collapsed on their people, on the families. And some families were evacuated from these houses because no way to live in them anymore.
Well, now the Palestinian population is increasing within Israel. Where do people go who a young married couple that want to build a house, where do they go? Where can they go?
They basically go to mixed parts of the cities. Like in Akka, we do have the mixed part where it's which we call the new city, which is very close to the old city, but you can see that it's like two parts divided. And they look so different from each other. So the new generation go to the new city and get houses. I mean, we don't have land to build houses in the cities, but we can get condos or like apartments that they buy. And in the same building, it's mixed. You can find Israeli families, Palestinian families live.
But there is no land to build on. You can't... buy a piece of land, I'd like to get a...
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard in the cities, but more in the Galilee, in the villages, where the Palestinian population still own their land, and they can build on their land within their villages.
I see. So there's no problem. There isn't the problem that we have in the West Bank or in parts of Jerusalem where...
The population
Palestinians want to build even on their own land and can't get a permit.
It's a bit different between the part within Israel and West Bank and Gaza Strip. It's a bit different. Palestinians within Israel who had their lands before 48, part of them still own this land, still have it, and they built their houses on it. Big part of them just lost the land or the villages in 48, so they have no more land. But they can see the land in front of their village, but it's not their land anymore.
Now your family is in the villages around Akka. You have some farmland and some olive trees.
My family comes actually originally from Akka, but they lived in El Birwi village before 48. And the reason they moved from Akka to El Birwi because they had big farm and big house and farmers, and they were pretty wealthy. But they lost everything in 48. And by the way, it's Mahmoud Darwish village, El Birwi.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So They lost all their land?
Yes. And they had to go back to Akka to live in one room with seven kids.
But now, some of your family is back in the villages, is that?
No, we are not allowed. No one is allowed.
I thought they were. Okay. Oh.
So. We see the village. We pass through the village when we go to Galilee. But
no one's out there. No, or your family is in Acre.
No one single Palestinian person lives in that village anymore. It turned to be a former Israeli village.
I see.
Ahi Yehud, the name of this village now. Ahi Yehud.
And that's the story. The story of... And what's tragic is that's the story that continues to be played out. The land... Taking of the land, even within the 1967 borders, Israel continues to take the land, build the settlements. East Jerusalem take the land, build settlements.
I mean, it's repeats itself. It's ongoing sad stories, and my story is just part of the story. It's humongous story.
But you have the right to vote. Is that right? And you have
goes back to the democracy.
The democracy, and there's some. There are some.
Yeah. If I want to vote, yes.
There are some Palestinians. What, five or so in the Knesset? Five.
I don't count the number anymore. I don't care. Be honest with you. Who sits in that Knesset?
It doesn't.
No, I don't belong to this institution, so I don't care who sits there.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to listen to Israel talk about it being a democracy when they've created this Jim Crow society, really. It's a society like the United States in the early part of the 20th century with blacks. It's completely... separate, segregated facilities. So to hear them talk about it being a democracy is difficult, and that's why I think we need to talk about it as an apartheid society. And if you look at the United Nations protocols for apartheid and apply that to Israel, you'll see it's a very, very classic form of apartheid, of a separate society.
Maybe one day I will belong to this institution when this institution turns to be equal institution for both Palestinians and Israelis under one flag or under one government or under one state. But you never know. Maybe sooner or later this is going to happen.
Yeah, well.
We don't know.
Okay, so moving on to your current life, shall we say. You and your husband live in Jerusalem. And so tell us, why did you decide to leave your ancestral land, the Akka area, and move to Jerusalem?
It happened actually in end of 86. I don't know if it was sort of a decision or just, you know, it came by chance. I was offered to play at El Hakawati Theater at that time in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And after my first diploma, I felt that I have so much desire to act because I had a drama and education program. So I felt that I wanted to be in the drama field, and when I was offered to act in one of their plays, I just moved easily. It took me only one night to decide. So it wasn't a huge decision.
Where did you study drama?
In Haifa, one of the Israeli institutions there, Beit Rutenberg. Yeah. And after I graduated, I was offered this acting part in El Hakawati Theater, which located at that time in East Jerusalem. It's actually still in East Jerusalem, but it's the National Palestinian Theater now. Mm-hmm. They changed the name of it. So that's how it happened, and since then I am there. After Al-Hakawati, I worked for 14 years at the Early Childhood Resource Center between Jerusalem and West Bank. I love my work, and I love the people, and I love being there, and I don't have any reason yet to leave. It's part of my land, part of my people. I have passion to both parts of Palestine. I feel I belong to both, and I have no problem to be either or, you know.
Is it difficult for you to move between?
Sometimes. In some cases, when the closure and the checkpoints become too tough, I can't pass through. For me, as Palestinians carrying the Israeli passport, I also, in certain places, I can't get in. I'm not allowed. And especially during the first Intifada and the second Intifada, probably 70-something% of the places I couldn't enter because of the Israeli passport. I wasn't allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. They consider me Israeli while I am Palestinian. I just wanted to do my work and to work with teachers and kindergartens and kids. All this, all what I wanted to do. I didn't do any political, unless they consider this also political activities. So, but I wasn't allowed. Now it's a bit easier, and most of the checkpoints are okay to get in and out. So I'm doing that as much as I can.
So you live in Jerusalem
and work between Jerusalem and West Bank.
And West Bank. So you're in Ramallah. You're going into Ramallah.
I have to pass through checkpoints, either to go to Bethlehem or to go to Ramallah or to go to Nablus. Yes. It's surrounded by checkpoints. So wherever you go in West Bank, you have to pass through the checkpoints.
Right. Now, and when you want to go see your family
in Akka, no. I don't have checkpoints to pass through. I drive Jerusalem through Tel Aviv to Haifa, Haifa to Akka.
And you have Israeli plates on your car, so
yes, it's yellow, the yellow one. So to go to Akka, it's very smooth. To go to Haifa, very smooth. It's much more difficult to go to West Bank and Gaza. Yeah. Oh, Gaza Strip, don't mention it. It's impossible now.
Now, how did you come to expressive therapies? When did you decide that this is what you wanted to do, and you wanted to get a degree? And how did that happen?
You won't believe this. It happened in Jenin refugee camp.
Uh-huh.
Julia Byers, who was the head of the PhD program at Lesley University at that time, came to Israel to teach some courses, because Lesley University has a branch in Netanya.
Mm-hmm.
So Julia Byers came every summer to Netanya to teach some courses.
Which is in Israel.
Yeah. But in her free time, weekend time, she came to East Jerusalem and West Bank to teach, to work with people, to do these workshops. So winter 2004, she came to the Palestinian Counseling Center where I worked at that time, and she needed somebody to go with her to the refugee camp because she wanted to go to work with widows who lost their husbands, mothers who lost their kids during the when they invaded the camp in 2001-2002. So she spoke no Arabic, and the women there spoke no English, but she wanted to do the expressive art workshops with them. So I went with her to the refugee camp, and she worked with the widows there for 2 full intensive days. So I was translating from Arabic to English, English to Arabic. So I was active in all activities she did with the women, and I just got fascinated from the work, from the activities, from the tears I saw, from the letters they wrote. And after I saw her working with them, I said, this is exactly what I want to do in Palestine.
Uh-huh.
So it happened.
So it happened. Now, tell us a bit about expressive therapies. What is it?
It's a combination of therapy and art, using arts in therapy, combining therapy within the art. I do several kind of arts, like writing letters and painting draws and dancing and moving, doing drama and puppets, and using all these arts and letting the people first express themselves, explore the art, and finding their ways to be more creative, and discovering how creative they can be when they get the chance to be creative.
Now, for a population of people who live under occupation, who have seen the kind of trauma that these kids and adults as well have seen, how important is expressive therapies to help them deal with this traumatic situation?
When they do the art in the beginning, they don't talk politics, but through the process itself, the politic situation comes out. People who live in Jerusalem and West Bank, even when they don't talk politics, they live the politic. You know what I mean?
Sure.
To go from Jerusalem
That's
to
right.
West. So it's ongoing checkpoints, it's ongoing wall. Some of them talk about it through the art. Some of them don't mention it through the art, but they mention it verbally. But in general, what they explore right now is how art can help them first to express that and to find it somehow in their art. And even when they don't think that they are talking politics, they draw the wall, for example, which is politic. They draw the checkpoints, or they say how much it's hard for the woman to go to see, the woman from Jerusalem, how much it's hard for her to go to see her family in West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So she sometimes draws that. Or the women from Sheikh Jarrah area, some of them lost their houses because they are turning Sheikh Jarrah area in East Jerusalem to sort of settlers area. So the women, when they brought the boxes and the recycled materials, they wanted to build their own houses within these boxes. So they cut the boxes and they painted the boxes and they glued the boxes, and when they looked at the boxes, they found out that they built their area, a Sheikh Jarrah area. So this is one example. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sometimes the arts bring these issues, but sometimes these arts bring personal issues about their life, about their kids, about the drug issue in the old city, about poverty, about losing houses, about million things, yeah. Name it.
Well, it seems to me that an important thing for you to do is to try to reproduce yourself. That is to say, you have this talent, you have this degree, there's so much work to do. How are you working with the population there to train people to do this, to work with adults, moms and dads and kids?
What I'm trying the last 2 years after I graduated, I went back to Palestine. I wanted to gain experience in working with all kids, teenagers, mothers, counselors. And I was really lucky to find how awareness people in Palestine have for this subject. I was totally positively shocked how the organizations in Palestine welcome this expressive art therapy thing. So they just said, come and teach, come and train our staff, come and work with our teachers, come and work with our kids. And I was amazed. I work non-stop. I run day and night. And I can't stop. So many projects are coming and so many places are inviting me. And right now I am on my way to train people who could do this work with me. Yeah. I can't keep doing this by myself.
No, it seems to me that's important, that to try to find people that you can work with and train and to reach this population which needs this kind of therapy. I think
I'm doing all this through my car, and my car gets too stuffed now, too small to do all this.
Right. So, well, tell us about what you want to do now. Tell us about how you're going to deal with that very issue.
I want to have a train.
Yeah.
Since I can't have a train now, maybe I'll get bus. And maybe it's too expensive to get the bus. Maybe I get van. What I do want to do now, I want to have a bigger car. You name it, whether it's van or bus. And within this van or bus, I want to have all my art materials and equipments so that I can put it in the car with all the equipments needed and driving it with the well-trained people with me and go to places and reach the people who can't reach us, reach the people who can't reach me in Jerusalem. Reach kids who can get out of their villages. So I want to reach these people, do art with them, basically expressive art, not for the sake of art, expressive art therapy art. And hopefully sooner or later, this dream will come true, to go to the people, do the work with them, help them as much as I can, leave them with some basics, some tools that they can go with and they can be helpful by, and then go to another camp or another village, do another work, another workshops or another training, and then fly again. So this is the dream, to have this flying mobile bus where I can reach people all over Palestine. I'm not talking only about West Bank and Jerusalem. I would love to do work in Akka, in Haifa, in Lehi, in Ramli, where I can reach.
That's right. It's the same issues, and that's why I wanted to talk about where you grew up and what's happening to Palestinians who live in Israel, because it's the same kind of need. It's the same problem. It's the same segregation. It's the
so the bus goal is not only to reach where I am now, right now, within only East Jerusalem and West Bank. It's actually to reach all places where people need this, or places I can reach. Hopefully, I will reach one day Gaza Strip. I know it's like a dream now for me. But you know what? It's another dream, which is good to have these dreams all the time.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. How do you... You right now you're working in some schools in Jerusalem. The Helen
School. I work for the last 2 years, 1.5 years in two schools, one in Attur area, and it's called Attur Girls School, and I did 1 year at Helen Keller School. I worked with kids who have
blindness,
some
visual,
of them
visual problems
because some of them can see partly and some of them see fine, but they have some other issues like ADHD, ADD, hyperactivity. And it was the first school that welcomed this program, and I was thrilled to work with these kids, and hopefully I will continue doing that.
How for the visually impaired kids, art they can't see.
Yeah.
And yet I know you do amazing things with kids, with art, with children who can't see or have very poor vision. Can you talk a little bit about working with these children?
I disagree with you. When you say they can see, I believe from my experience that yes, they can see, but they see in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I found out that they are not poor in visual things, because I believe actually that they are very rich, because they can see in the eyes, they can visualize things. So they become very rich in visualizing.
Another sense. Yeah.
They do drama, and you don't have to have eyes to do drama.
Right.
Even if you don't, and if you can't see,
which
you
is
can
part of expressive therapy.
Exactly.
So drama is very much
exactly
a part,
drama. They do puppet theater. Mm-hmm. They touch the puppet. They play with the puppet, and they have the sense how the puppet feels like or looks like. So they play with the puppet even if they don't see the puppet in their eyes. They do movement and dance and music, and actually doing the dancing and the movement with the music with these kids was very ritual. It was so enriching my experience, because they get the music so fast. They get the rhythm within their body.
Mm-hmm.
They get they do the movement, and they just fly with the music. They do that fantastically. So when they play, when they do the finger paint, they don't see the color, but they feel the color, and they ask for it. They say, I want red, I want green, I want yellow. They visualize the color, which is...
Really?
Yeah.
So they...
I ask them, do you want purple? They say, no, I want blue. Okay, fine, get blue. What about yellow? Oh, I don't like yellow, I prefer red. It's flowers color.
Yeah.
So they connect the color with the environment surrounds them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, when you want to move out into the villages, I guess you can go from Jenin all the way to Hebron. I guess that's in the West Bank.
It's like going from Paris to Boston,
yeah,
more or less, 4 to 5 hours.
Yeah. When you... How do you make contacts in these villages? How do you, who do you work through if you...
I do have connections with organizations who work in these villages and refugee camps. And right now, because I've been working for 20-something years in Palestine, and I changed 2 to 3 organizations. I don't change very rapidly my work. It takes me a few years to change my work, and I like to settle down in the work and make the connection and make the work. Few years after, if I get better chance or I empower or develop myself and I find another organization that answers my work and my need, I go for it. So right now I work at El Mada, which is the first music therapy center in Palestine,
mm-hmm,
which is ALMADA. And what I'm doing there is exactly what I studied at Lesley, expressive art therapy work, pure. And through Almada, I'm also spreading my work to other organizations who know the Almada and are in contact with Almada, but who know me personally and wants to do the work with me also personally. So I have the connection with the organizations, and the organizations have the connection with the people within that area. Mm. So I reach the organization that reaches these people, and then I reach these people one-on-one or in groups. So it's through the Palestinian organizations in that mm-hmm. areas.
Now, with your bus, would you is part of your dream to be a part of some of these organizations?
Or? I am already part of Al Mada organization.
You are.
And Al Mada organization wants to support the whole mobile bus
Very
idea.
Good. It does.
But Al Mada organization can't afford buying the bus.
No, right.
Can afford.
Yeah.
Offering supplies, art supplies, equipments, art materials, art tools, but can't afford getting the bus.
Right.
So my mission is to get the bus, and through Al Mada organization, the bus is going to hit the road, hopefully.
So you have your connections, you have your network, you have
yeah.
your organizations, you have your contacts.
And I have the brilliant friends in Boston here who helped doing these presentations that seems to be very successful, hopefully.
Well, this is the kind of work we need to be supporting, and particularly doing the kind of work that I think Expressive Therapies does. Is that as we talked earlier, when you're dealing with this population of people who are living in such traumatic times, living prisoners within their own countries, within their own homes sometimes. It's an incredibly vital work. And so you're here in Boston. You've had a couple of fundraisers trying to talk to people about this and raising money and getting support from Leslie.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, I came in the beginning, I came to see my friends who are very, very close to my heart through the 4 years I spent in Palestine. And the idea was to do presentation about my work in Palestine, to share this with my friends, my colleagues from Leslie, and, you know, professors who taught me, and I still have this great feelings toward all of them, that because they were very supportive always. So the presentation idea became bigger. It's like ball of snow, how you say?
Yeah, snowball,
and
right.
Snowball, and the friends in Boston said, since you're going to prepare for the presentation and you have this wonderful dream, why not to do it as fundraiser nights? So that's how the whole issue turned out to be fundraiser. I already finished the first presentation, and next Saturday I have the second one. So the first, according to my friends, the first presentation went very successfully.
Very well.
According to my feelings, it went very wonderfully.
Yes. I can attest to the fact that it did, having been there. Now, you also have the dream of coming back to get your PhD. What will the PhD allow you to do that you can't do now, or why are you going to pursue a PhD?
Maybe pursuing more experience, maybe pursuing more knowledge, maybe pursuing the certificate itself, it's all together. Mm-hmm. But basically pursuing, I think, more knowledge in putting mm-hmm. all this in richer perspective, as we say. I'm not sure. What amazed me yesterday that I met with the head of Michelle, with the head of the PhD program at Leslie, and I told her about my current work in Palestine, and she looked at me and said, "You are doing your PhD without knowing that."
That's right.
I said, "What?" She said, "Yes, because you are taping, recording, evaluating, doing the field work, reaching the people with your car, So it's part of the PhD program anyhow. So you just need to work on the dissertation. So hopefully I get a scholarship. Hopefully I will do the PhD program. It's one of my goals. But if I don't reach it, it's fine. I'm doing the PhD work even without getting the certificate.
And you're learning and learning and learning.
And learning and learning and getting more and more experience. So the certificate will get in the end sooner or later, somehow, sometime. But I'm not worried. Even if I don't get it, I'm doing the work that any PhD.
Yeah. And it's interesting, a lot of people don't know this, but within the Palestinian society, there is an incredibly high number, percentage of people that have PhDs. It's one of the most educated populations in the world. The tragedy is that a lot of people have these degrees and no opportunity to be employed.
But at least they have them.
But this you know, when we go over and we to Palestine and talk to people about their resistance. How do you resist this occupation? One of the things they say is we
educate ourselves.
We don't have much houses.
We don't have much land. We don't have much money, but we can get much education.
Yeah.
In my situation, I can truly say that I'm very lucky. I always got the opportunity to work and pursue my work and pursue my education. So I'm not. I can't complain about that. I always had the opportunity to study, to do education, to come to Leslie and to do my ex-work and my current work in Palestine. So I am not in the track that I'm complaining I have no work. I do have work and I'm thrilled that I have it. I'm lucky. But many people don't.
They don't.
But, yeah. But people, you know, keep on. They keep trying and educating themselves. And the most they do now for the new generation, I'm talking about the old generation, that they do want to get better education for their kids, for their future kids. So some of them, even the leftover land they had, they sold it for their kids, to send their kids to the universities.
Yeah.
And to schools, and to good schools. Yeah.
Yeah, you see that. You see that. You know.
Which is great. I mean, it shows how much people sometimes, under very stressful life, they can try to do the best of it.
Well, it says something about the Palestinian people that they have a vision of the future, that it's going to be better. It's not a people that's giving up. At all, it's what's so amazing to me is the vision that they have of the future.
Giving up what? There is no way to give up anything. Some of them had to give up of Palestine in 1948, and they regretted, and they're gonna go to the grave with this regression because somehow they didn't fight enough to stay in Palestine.
Yeah.
That was an interview with Ketam Adelby, which took place in 2010, 4 years ago, as she began her journey to make a reality of her dream of creating an expressive therapies program in the West Bank of Palestine that would operate out of a specially equipped bus that would serve as a mobile classroom traveling through the West Bank, serving children in refugee camps, villages in need of her therapeutic services. And now an update on Ketam's dream. For the first 4 years of the Expressive Therapies program, Ketam steadfastly carried supplies in and out of her secondhand car and into a used small station wagon, clearly being well regarded in the community. The underlying core of her work was her dedication to the important work of mental health under the day-in and day-out hardships of life under occupation. Teachers kept coming to the trainings, and her work was also noticed by some significant Palestinian organizations. incredibly and not in the usual way things are done in Palestine, she was informed that the Welfare Association in Ramallah, the Early Childhood Resource Center in Ramallah, the Ala Fefi Bus Company in Nazareth, and the Early Childhood Center in Nazareth were coming together to finance the purchase of a Mercedes-Benz bus to be especially equipped for the Expressive Therapies program that would incorporate her ideas for conducting workshops and supplying space to expand her work throughout the West Bank. The mobile bus is now a reality. It is specially equipped with art materials, puppets, chairs and tables, and dramatic play resources. The bus is gorgeously decorated on the outside and makes a creative statement as it moves along the roads and through the villages of the West Bank. Katam now works as a therapeutic resource to 30 kindergarten programs in the West Bank. She conducts teacher trainings and works with children and their mothers using expressive therapies. She visits each kindergarten that she serves 5 times, training teachers and working closely with the families so that the therapies can continue and be reinforced at home. Presently, she works with 1 kindergarten in each village or refugee camp, with the goal being that the teachers trained could eventually become trainers themselves and thus extend the reach of the program. The funding was allocated for a year, mostly coming from the Welfare Association, and now the program must raise money to keep this program on the road and in the 30 West Bank villages and refugee camps. But what is clear is the dream has now become a reality. And that is all the time we have this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a segment of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live through the internet at www.wzbc.org. If you missed This Week in Palestine on the radio, you can hear the program at any time by accessing the archive right on the homepage at wzbc.org. Simply click on Archive on the homepage, then 8 a.m. Sunday morning, and then click on Listen. The program is on the archive for 2 weeks. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.